Well, hi there, listeners, and welcome back. Happy New Year. My name is Stephanie Safarian, and you're listening to episode 513 of Sustainable Minimalists. This is a listener-supported show about intentional and eco-friendly minimalist living. On today's show, we're talking about something that I frankly haven't covered in a long time, and that's zero waste living. I don't know, where have I been? What have I been doing? We haven't talked about zero waste in a while. So today we're doing it. We're talking about zero waste for families. My guest today, she says she saves almost $20,000 a year living a zero waste life, and she has three children. Think about it. Today I'm speaking with Frederica Siren. She is the founder of ZeroWasteFamily.com. She is the author of The Practical Guide to Zero Waste for Families, and she is a passionate environmental activist who is doing things differently. She is happily going against the grain and happily making noise as she does so. Make sure your ears perk up when we talk about bubblegum and flowers that come in plastic. Mic drop moments there. Frederica, so excited to talk to you today. How are you?
Oh, thank you for having me. Oh, I'm doing great. We're just having a snowstorm here in Sweden, so.
I wish we were having a snowstorm here in Boston. We haven't had hardly any snow this year. We're here today to talk about zero waste for families. You are an environmental activist. You're an author of a book on this topic. Tell us who you are, what you do, but also tell us that moment you found zero waste living. Like, it's not an attractive lifestyle for a lot of people, but something about it spoke to you. Tell us about that moment.
Oh, so yeah. So I'm a journalist and I've been writing about environmental issues for a very long time. And I wrote a lot about holding companies and the government accountable for their part. And then when I became a mom in 2006, that was the first time I realized that climate change was going to be the biggest threat that was threatening her future. And I actually, at the same time when I was a stay-at-home mom then, I listened to an interview by Colin Beaver, who is also known as No Impact Man. And he was in New York with his daughter named Isabella, just like my daughter, and his wife, and they had decided to have 1 year where they were going to have no impact at all, living in an apartment in middle of New York. And I thought this was so fascinating. I began to read his blog and realized, like, okay, I can't live a life without any impact. So, but I should be able to do something. And so we began to reduce our waste little by little. Every year, we focused on something that was like canned food 1 year. It was to bring our own bags to shopping. And we kept on doing this for many years. In 2016, we decided that, you know what, let's see if we could be a zero waste family. And it came from a lot of, let's challenge ourselves. We love to challenge it. We think this is fun. We didn't know we were getting ourselves into, of course. And at that time, we had three kids. But it came from more like a challenge. And I don't think we expected that we were going to succeed to become zero waste, to be honest.
But did you? How does trash look in your household?
Yeah, I would say that until we became parents to a fur baby, we were very much a zero waste family. Astro, our beautiful dog, who's a rescue dog, he definitely came with his own little waste, and I don't think I thought about that. I would say that Astro is actually a very low waste dog. We're very lucky that way. But of course, there are some aspects of his life that comes with some plastic. Sometimes we try to work on recycling it. We're still trying to work on coming up with some alternatives. But I would say that I would consider ourselves a very zero waste family.
I know you live in Sweden, Frederica, and you probably don't know this, but my listeners do. I recently interviewed a fellow Swede about the differences in which Scandinavia treats nature. You have a lot of outdoor time. It's embedded into your culture. Now I get to talk to a second Swede, and I must ask you about Sweden's culture around waste. Here in America, I call us the land of wasteful maximalism. We tend to be a very wasteful culture and country. How does Sweden, how does Scandinavia perhaps view waste?
Yeah, it is really interesting because obviously I lived in California and I lived in Sweden, and it is night and day. I can buy things in bulk very easily. There are bulk options everywhere. I can buy things in refills. They wrap everything organic in plastic in this country, and that it drives me nuts. But I would say, so Sweden is really good when it comes to recycling and composting. Composting, curbside composting have been existing in Sweden forever. And it is, I live in an apartment building. We compost, we curbside compost. But they also recycle really well. They recycle majority of the waste in Sweden. So, for example, I live in an apartment building. We have a recycling room, which happens to be my responsibility in this apartment building to keep clean and to organize it. But there you have to sort everything. I'm talking about newspaper to hard plastic, soft plastic, batteries, you name it. You have to actually sort through everything. And then we also have recycling centers. We have mini ones all around the city where you can take plastic, glass, cans, anything. And then for the bigger things, like if I, for example, if I want to get rid of a bed, I would have to take it to a community recycling center, which is accessible for everyone. And they have people who work there. But there, I will literally have to take apart the whole bed to take like the wood here, take the nails here, take the upholstery here. And I like this because it really does make you think before you buy something, or especially when you want to discard it. Like, how am I going to get rid of this? Because you don't just throw it away to landfill, because we don't have that many landfills.
That's so fascinating to me for two reasons. So just a clarifying question here to make sure I understand. I'm assuming that all your efforts, all your recycling efforts, means that Sweden has a high rate of recycling, a high recycling rate. Here in America, we're recycling, but I believe it's only 8% of what we put in our bin actually gets recycled. So do you know offhand, does Sweden have higher, hopefully much higher recycling rate than America?
Yes. And I don't know exactly the number, to be honest, but I know it is 80 to 90% that's being recycled in Sweden. And they do a really good job. And I really appreciate it more now when I'm living in Sweden after living in the US. Because it is also that we don't have to sit here and read, like, okay, which one? Can this be recycled or not? It is the fact that you do recycle and you were required to recycle.
Right. So going back to the bed that you personally have to take apart in order to recycle, I'm thinking about how here in America, citizens would, not everybody, but in general, I'm thinking that Americans would balk at that. They would throw up their hands and say, oh, heck no, I'm not taking apart this bed. I'm not putting in all of that effort to ensure an environmentally healthy afterlife for this product, whatever it is, bed, computer, whatever it is. I'm in America, we tend to think that once we're done with an item, we're washing our hands of it. It's no longer our problem, essentially. Does it seem to you that in Sweden, there's more of a care for the afterlife of possessions?
I really do believe that. There are so much consumerism in Sweden too. I'm not gonna sit here and sugarcoat that Swedes are like perfect, because they're not. But I do think that because it is more challenging, and I wouldn't even say it's challenging, but it is a little bit more work and effort into to discard your old things. I think Swedes tend to think about it a little bit more. And it's like, and I agree with you, because living in the US, I remember in San Diego when they were getting curbside composting and how my neighbors were just freaking out over this. And no one's going to tell me what to do with my waste. And I'm like, okay, it's not that hard. You literally take it to the bin next to your trash. I don't understand this mentality. In Sweden, I think is, here's my thing. I have to get rid of it. I have to take it. I had to take my car. Or I had to rent a car or borrow a car. I have to take it to the big recycling center. I know I'm going to have to take it apart. There are people who will help me, but I have to put them in the right bin. And these recycling centers that I'm talking about, the big ones, it is amazing. They are jam-packed with people on the weekends. So people do it. They do take their things over there.
Because Sweden has such a higher recycling rate than America, it sounds to me as though living a zero waste life can be easier, right? Because you have the infrastructure in place to create less waste. We just don't have it here. You're more advanced with regard to end-of-life factors as they relate to stuff. How is creating less waste connected to combating the climate crisis? Just really connect it for listeners who don't understand how waste relates to global warming.
I think it's really interesting because I find so many people who say, oh, what's just me? What is one individual really going to do? But if we all think about that, think about how many people are on the planet. It is a ripple effect, I truly believe. We are a zero waste family. We don't produce waste. We haven't done it in a really long time. Now, do I think that everyone can live like us? No. Do I think that everyone has to? No. The reason why we are doing this, like I said, it was a fun challenge to see if we could do it. But then second of all, is also that we are influencing other people to make other choices, to make their own choices. I believe that zero waste or sustainable living is very personal and that it looks different for everyone. But what I have noticed since we became a zero waste family, and it was all about just us, I didn't care what anyone else is going to think about us. But what I realized was all the neighbors, all the friends, all the people in our community, in our school who came in contact with us, they start making choices too that were more sustainable. They start looking at their own trash bin. And if you think about then how many people we have influenced just by doing what we're doing and showing that, and doing what we're doing and sharing about it without pointing fingers, which I think is most important. I believe firmly in that we will make people change their own patterns based on how we inspire them, not what our opinions are. So we all have to look into our own ways and how we live our life and the choices we make and how we vote with our wallet. I have seen a huge change since we began this journey. In 2015, when we removed our trash can, there were no compostable bags. There were no reusable Ziploc bags. They were not refillable shampoos and bulk shopping. We had to figure out everything on our own. What I have seen since then, it is a huge movement that has changed. I see so many people talking about sustainability on a personal level. I see people trying to reduce their own waste, to making better choices, to shop from more sustainable companies. It is a movement and I see it changing and I think it's really cool and it has to start with someone. So why not me?
I love that. It has to start with someone. So why not you? Why not all of us? Why don't we be the change makers at the forefront? And I'll just answer my own question for any listeners who are confused. What does waste have to do with the climate crisis? Let's not forget that those fossil fuels are pulled from the earth to create our chairs, our electronics, our fossil fuels, plus all of these other renewable and non-renewable resources, right? This stuff that we manufacture comes from somewhere. Buying less, consuming less, wasting less is a powerful way to reduce our impact on the planet. I want to talk to you about that moment when you removed your trash can. I believe you said it was 2015. When you removed your trash can, you had a rule. You would not buy anything that you could not compost or you could not recycle. How on earth did that work out with three young children?
It's funny. So I think that actually the benefit for my kids were that they were quite young. So two of them were only 2 and 4. So I don't think that they actually, for the longest time, they did not know that we lived a different life. They didn't know that there were people who actually had trash cans. They didn't understand that part. My daughter was 9. So she obviously, it was a little bit more tricky for her because, and I know she says that actually in our documentary, A Zero Time to Waste, she says, like, why can't we have a trash can? Everyone else has one. And I think it was so endearing for her to say that because obviously, why do we have to be different? We were very patient with ourselves. We took it one step at a time. We did a trash audit, meaning we collected all our trash for 1 week. And it sounds really gross, but it really isn't. But we will go through the trash at the end of the week and look through everything was in there and see, okay, what's in here? how can we change the patterns of these things? How can we reduce this to be nothing? And it started with that the one-third of our trash was food waste. That was a huge eye-opener for me. I'm like a family here living on a very tight budget and feeding three kids, and we're throwing away one-third of our food. So that was obviously start composting our food waste, but also like just reducing the food waste in general. Then second was like, okay, so what things in this trash can we replace with a reusable thing? And then we had this one third that was literally trash that we had no other option to say, we're just not going to bring it into our home. And that just became our rules. And again, it was a journey. And I say that in my book, it's a journey, this whole sustainable life. And it's a beautiful journey and it's a fun journey. And sometimes there are bumps in the road and you can't be discouraged. You just have to keep going, move on. But also every time you accomplish something, you actually reduce one waste from your home, you should celebrate that because that's a huge accomplishment.
So I'm assuming you still don't have a trash can. Is that right?
Nope, no trash can. And like I said, my two boys, actually my youngest, I remember he came home from kindergarten with a napkin that had a pattern on it. And he was convinced this was a treasure map because he had never seen a paper napkin before.
Okay, but so I'm just so fascinated by this because I have a trash can. And I mean, we've reduced the amount of trash that we create over the years. I love how you have made the point a few times now that it's a journey. You don't just snap your fingers and then the next day you're zero waste like magic. It does not work like that. Listeners, for anybody who thinks it works like that, it doesn't. But what happens when you have an item that you can't compost, you can't recycle, and you don't have a trash can? I don't know. I can't even think of one off the top of my head. Maybe a rubber band, let's say, or I don't know. I don't know. Pick something. What do you do with it? I'm thinking for my minimalists listening, they are concerned that your house is full of clutter because you can't throw these things out. What do you do with it?
I think that also what happened was when we became a zero waste family, we inadvertently, not planning, became a very minimalist family as well. We just simply stopped bringing things into our home. And I have to say, it became a very freeing feeling. So my house is definitely not cluttered, quite the opposite. I have very few things. More things I removed from my home or less things I brought in, more free and happy our family became. So yes, we do end up. So for example, we have had where my kids' friends will come over and they will have a piece of gum. And they say, hey, where do I throw this? And I will say, I'm sorry, we do not have a trash can, but I will give you a piece of toilet paper and you can put your gum in there. You can take it with you. I have had friends who like our friends now, they're so wonderful that they know, don't bring trash. They will bring homemade gifts to us if they're bringing it. And I love that. But we have someone who brought flowers once and I'm like, wow, beautiful flowers. They come wrapped in plastic. And I said, okay, would you mind taking that plastic with you? Now, of course, this doesn't mean that the plastic is gone. It just went to someone else's house or probably trash can would be my guess. But for us, we're just saying no thank you to a lot of things, but we don't get that many things coming in that are actually becomes trash in our house.
Wow. Okay. So much there, Frederica. I have to ask you, number one, are you considered the strange person in your friend group? Are people rolling their eyes at you behind your back? Are people talking about you behind your back? Please take your gum home. Please take your flower trash home. On the one hand, I love it for you because if the way the status quo is moving is not working. And let's be honest, everybody, it's not working. We need to disrupt the status quo. We need to do things differently. You're definitely doing things differently. But on the other hand, I wonder, how do you handle being so radically different, countercultural? Like, are you embarrassing your kids? And if so, how do you handle that tension?
Yeah, I think in the beginning, when we first became a zero waste family, people already knew we were a sustainable family, but that we were trying to live as sustainable as possible. But once we became a zero waste family, I think people absolutely had no idea. And I think that I'm okay to take, it's fine what people think of me. I don't take it too personal. And being a Swede growing up in living in the US, I was already different. So I guess it wasn't too hard on me in that sense. But I have to say, there have been times where my kids are the ones who had to take it, especially in school. They will call them gotcha questions. That is when classmates will come because clearly they're talking about at home or their parents are saying something. And they will come and they will try to ask questions to my kids. They're going to get them. They're going to find that they don't have an answer. My kids are so wonderful that they actually are very strong in themselves. And I'm amazed how often that happened that there will be a comment or a question. And they will, if they don't have the answer, they will say, you know what? I will get back to you because I actually don't know about that. I don't know what happens to running shoes. And they will go home and ask me. And then they will go back and answer it. And so I think that you more people got to know us, and you more these parents' kids came to hang out in our house and realized that our house was really fun because you got to bake, you got to make tomato sauce. We had a wonderful garden running around, and we were parents who were home all the time. I think that they started to realize that we weren't not very home. Like we were not too bad. We weren't too weird. We were just living a different style, lifestyle, and they started to appreciate us more and started to adopt more. For example, we always have Zero Waste birthday parties. We have what we call a Zero Waste birthday party box where we have reusable things for birthday parties. And we always make our own cakes. We bring our own snacks. And it became so popular that this box had now made a round. So people from school will call us and say, I have a birthday party. Can I borrow your box? And this box just made a round through the school. And I think that was a really cool concept that they actually adopted something. They saw that this is really cool and that is something I can do. Why not ask if we can borrow it?
I love that idea. I'm assuming there's party hats, decorations, that type of stuff in the box?
Yeah, and plates and cups and mason jars for treasure hunts with candy and tablecloths and napkins and all those things.
Oh, that's a great idea. Everybody can get on board with saving a bit of money. Who wants to spend $50 on disposable plates and decorations? No, not me. I would like to save that $50. You made the point earlier that it sounds like you have a thick skin, right? Like you don't really so much care about what other people think about you or say about you behind your back. And you have to have a thick skin if you're going to be a change maker. But I want to circle back to something you said earlier about how becoming a zero waste family also led you to embrace minimalism. And I would say also, perhaps you didn't say this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm guessing that embracing zero waste and embracing minimalism also enticed you to embrace a conscious consumer lifestyle in which you're hopping off the consumerist bandwagon. So I'm just curious about your thoughts in which conscious consumption, zero or low waste living, minimalism, how do all these lifestyles, for lack of a better word, how do all these lifestyles interconnect? How do they weave in and out in your daily lives?
Yeah, it's funny. Like I said, I didn't know very much about minimalism. I'd heard about it, but I don't think I ever envisioned myself to become a minimalist. But of course, when we became a Zero Waste family, what happened was that obviously we're not going to go to the mall. We're not going to go into the store unless we have to. We're not going to bring things home. And as we also start looking around, okay, why do we have so many shoes? Why do we have so many suits? Do we really need them all? So we actually started to clean out the house. It started with that we had actually storage. So what would happen was, before we became a Zero Waste family, we would buy a lot of stuff. And to make room for them, we would move them out to the garage. And when the garage got too full, my husband would take them down to a storage. And we just had this storage for years, paying a lot of money. And we realized that we wanted to start saving a little bit more money. And one way was to of course, reduce this storage. So we brought everything home from the storage to go through it and open every box, every bag to go through what we had. And it was a little bit of a shock. Like my husband, I didn't know this. He's a hoarder of t-shirts, or he was a hoarder of t-shirts. And he was a hoarder of saran wrap. I don't know what that was about. And they were just sitting in storage, not even being used. And when we had it all in front of ourselves and like realizing how much of this is so unnecessary, and we began to sell it and give it away, we also then realized we don't want to bring it back in. But because we don't go shopping, we really are not shopping people anymore. We used to go to mall for fun. We don't do that anymore because obviously it is a consumerism. It adds to climate change. It costs money and it's definitely not zero waste. So all of these three things have become like interconnected. Like I said, we planned to be a zero waste family. We didn't plan we're going to be minimalist. We didn't plan that we were going to hop off the consumerism. But that was a really cool thing that just happened naturally with zero waste.
And I'll just say for myself, I decided I was going to be a minimalist 7 or 8 years ago. I had no interest in becoming an environmentalist or a zero waster or a conscious consumer. I just wanted a clean, decluttered home. And here I am, 7 years later, a passionate advocate for the environment. It's interesting how different journeys lead us to the same place. That's so fascinating to me. But I have to ask you the big question. You save $18,000 a year as a zero waste family. Where on earth is that massive savings coming from?
We knew we were saving money becoming a zero waste family and minimalist and this lifestyle, but we didn't know how much it was. And when we actually start counting and adding it up, it was actually just an amazing amount of money. So where we save the most money, I would say, is transportation. So when we lived in California, we actually made sure to live, work, so we could only have one car. That made a huge difference because most people in California has at least two cars in the house. Here in Sweden, we don't need to have a car at all because we're middle of the city. So we walk or bike or take public transportation. That saves a lot of money. Second thing that actually saves a lot of money is battling food waste. Food waste is so bad for the planet, but it's also so bad for your wallet. Most people, an average family in the U.S., throws away one third of their food, adds up to thousands of dollars a year. So for us, it became about, okay, let's go through our fridge. Let's actually label everything. Make sure that we have one leftover eating day. So on Sundays is the day we take out all our leftovers and we eat those. I become really good at using leftovers to make new dishes. We eat all our vegetables before they go bad. We don't go shopping, grocery shopping, unless we really have to. And I make meal plans. And this will save a lot of money. I think the third place where we save most money is also buying everything secondhand. We buy everything secondhand except socks and underwear.
Wow. Yeah. When you lay it out like that, it sounds like there's massive savings to be had. I know my family, we live in the suburbs. Unfortunately, we need a car, but I can imagine how much savings, financial savings, we would have if we didn't have a car payment, didn't have to pay for gas, didn't have the car insurance, right? That's an amazing amount of money to save. I also am thinking about the food waste problem. This is something that my husband and I have really tried to tackle in the past few years. And I'll just say something that has helped with food waste and my home is the bone deep understanding that we do not have to eat like kings and queens every night. Like, we do not have to have a fancy gourmet meal every night. We can eat leftovers. And after we've consumed the leftovers, we feel exactly the same as we do as if we had this gourmet meal. Like, not every night has to be a fancy feast. It can be leftovers. It can be 3 day, 4 day old leftovers, right? I think a lot of times people get in the habit of letting taste buds rule the roost, but let's let reducing food waste rule the roost, if that makes any sense. I'm just curious though, Fredrika, a lot of my listeners are, I would say, intermediate zero wasters. Like they've already gotten rid of the tissues or the napkins or the single-use plastic items like the plastic baggies. They've already tackled the low-hanging fruit. The single-use disposables, they've gotten rid of those. Their life is just as good, if not better, without them. They're saving money, and they don't miss those items. What would be the next step for those people on their zero-waste journey?
I would say that the food waste is a major one to tackle, but I also would say, how about start growing your own food? I live in an apartment. I live in Sweden. I have a patio, and it is amazing how much food I grow in the summertime, or the, I would say, from spring to October, I grow outside. But then I actually grow food indoors, and that actually helps a lot because, well, I don't buy any food that comes in packaging, and it saves a lot of money, and I'm eating healthy, and I can provide the best food for my kids. I think that's a really good place to start, and it doesn't have to be so advanced that you're going to grow major tomato plants and stuff like that. If you can grow herbs, if you can grow some microgreens, you can grow some lettuce, a little bit of kale, that's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah. This is where self-sufficiency comes in, right? You're mentioning the growing your own food. No plastic to see here, right? No food miles, no transportation on a diesel-burning truck to your supermarket from thousands of miles away. I would say for listeners who are ready to take it up a notch, take a skill that you want to learn and learn it. Maybe it's growing your own food. For me this year, it was supposed to be last year, listeners, but I am behind the ball. For me this year, I am getting serious about sewing and specifically mending. I now have my hands on a lovely sewing machine. I am mending holes as opposed to just trashing stuff. If there's only one thing wrong with a t-shirt and it's a hole and I can mend it, that means I don't have to go buy a new shirt. That means I'm not getting rid of discarding the shirt that's otherwise perfectly fine. So what I'm working on this year is the self-sufficient skill of sewing and mending. Pick a skill and learn it, I think is what I would suggest.
I think the mending is a great idea, actually. I didn't even think about that one. But yes, my kids actually learned mending in homeschool during COVID. So I'm thinking, you know what? You have a lot of socks, they're holes. I'm going to teach you to mend. And oh boy, did they have a lot of fun. And oh man, have I saved a lot of socks from going to a landfill.
Yeah. Yeah. Like caring for what we already have, I think is something in America, the land of wasteful maximalism. Caring for what we have is not generally top of mind. And I'll be honest with you, Frederica, I keep going back as we're talking. My mind keeps going back to you telling people to take home their bubble gum and take home their plastic flower trash. I'm thinking about how we're at a turning point in the climate fight, right? Like the way we've been doing things is not working. So we can't continue to abide by societal norms and perhaps play nice and do what everybody else is doing because again, it's not working. And so what I love about you and what I'm going to take from our conversation and I'm going to hold it with me tomorrow, next year, years to come, is the fact that we need to disrupt what's not working. So thank you for that. I'm going to think about that bubble gum. I really am. Tell my listeners where they can learn more about you, your family, and your zero waste efforts.
You can find us on our website, zerowastefamily.com. I'm on Instagram, and we're also on YouTube. But if you go to our website, you can find our YouTube, and I produce videos pretty much weekly with tips and fun facts and just a little peek into my family and my beautiful kids and my amazing husband.
I'll make it easy for everybody. I'll just link to all your places in this week's show notes. Frederica, thank you so much. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and I wish you such a happy new year.
The same to you. Thank you for having me.
Listeners, that's a wrap, my friends. Show notes at mamaminimalist.com/513. A couple notes before we say goodbye. Number one, for my subscribers, for my book club members, I sent out an email, but if you missed it, first of all, if you didn't get my email that said this information, please email me so I can double check my list, make sure you're on it. We are reading The Comfort Crisis by Michael Easter. Book club is on February 12th. That's a Wednesday. We will only be doing one book club this time around. It will be 7 p.m. Eastern on February 12th. Come join us. We have a great time. We have a nice group going. Now we do have some eco tips this week. And my sincere apologies to Rose, who sent these a couple weeks ago and I never added them in. They are zero waste adjacent. So Rose wrote to me and she says that when it comes to reducing waste in her home, those plastic yogurt containers, like the 32 ounce size, the big ones, are perfect for leftovers for when she makes a big batch of soup. She just makes sure the soup is cooled first before putting it into the plastic. Then you have the perfect container. She uses glass jars to hold food gifts, like maybe pancake mix or cookies. She washes and keeps containers, whether it's plastic or glass, and then she reuses them. She gives other people cookies or food in them. She reuses bags. Like if you buy dried cranberries, let's say, and they come in a zippered bag, you can reuse that bag. Or a bread bag can be reused. You can reuse those Ziplocs too, over and over again, just rewash them. And so the take-home message here in America, we're taught, we're told, we're conditioned to believe that single use means you can only use it once. But in a lot of cases, a single use item can be reused. Think about that as you take your zero waste efforts up a notch in 2025. I'll see you all soon. Reach out if you need me and take care.